That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah.
What you said initially is like, is this person going to pull the plug on me? Like, but what you don't understand is when you really understand what your value is, when somebody pulls the plug on you and you've really done the work to be the best version of yourself, what ultimately happens, them pulling the plug on you is their loss.
I'm not an alpha male. I'm not a beta male either. I'm just a better man. Better man.
Yeah. Yo, what up, y'all? GYBB, get your balls back. WWDD, What Would Dante Do? The Sexual Revolution is being podcasted, and I am excited. We got a special guest today. Now, I know I've said that 1,000 times before, but this time I really mean it. A good friend of mine and content creator, rapper, comedian, sketch, wild, one of the head dudes, the regular dudes on Wildin' Out. Give it up for Coach Adele, y'all. What up, Coach? What's going on?
What up?
Let me just take this time to say hello to my partner in crime, Harry. What's going on with you, B? Are you good?
Dante, I'm living the life. If I was any happier, I'd be Lauren Bobart watching the musical Beetlejuice. That's the only way I could be enjoying myself more. At this moment in time.
I would be her date.
That's
with her
true.
Hand in my clip. I mean, come on now. She got a nice handful of Republican crotch. What's better than that? Awesome. Awesomeness.
Nice.
I want to get right into it. Coach, what's going on, bro? You good?
Yeah, man. I'm chilling in the crib, trying to get my lighting like your awesome background.
Thanks, bro. Appreciate it. Me and Coach just did Baldishana.
Baldishana.
We just did Baldishana in Union Square. Union Square.
Now, what is that for those of us who might not know? What is that?
So you got Rosh Hashanah, which is the Jewish New Year, and then you have National Ball Day, which is September 13th. So I did a hybrid event. Holiday for bald people. Bald Jewish New Year, essentially.
It's weird because I got circumcised right on 14th Street, so it was awesome, man. It was awesome.
Well, yeah, so it kind of felt like you were close to home, literally.
It's dope. Me and Coach has gotten close in the last. We've always been cool, but like we've gotten close in the last few, and I wanted to have him on. One of the things, Coach, do you have a girl right now? Or are you just free and swinging and mingling and whatever?
I'm in the process of dating myself. I think that's probably the best way to say it.
Is that by choice or is it what's the deal?
No, it's not by choice.
Okay,
you know what I mean. So you got to take a good look at a lot of stuff that you got going on. You know.
Yeah. Is it just that you got so much stuff going on that you don't have time, or is it just you just not out in the game, or what's the deal?
Well, no, right now I'm trying to make sure that I think when you get a certain age, you know, originally, like in my earliest relationships when I was like 20, you know, I was a late bloomer after high school, I started dating like in college. I didn't really date in college. I dated like after I got jail and went back to college. So like I was just really sort of more definitely not prepared, you know, to navigate a healthy relationship.
You went to jail, Coach?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What'd you go to jail for?
I was selling drugs, you know. This was like the thing. I was like a petty drug dealer that thought he was, you know.
Yeah, I get it.
Tony Montana.
Yeah. Where'd you do that? Or where were you at when you did that? What city?
In the Jersey Shore. Ocean County, New Brunswick. That's the kind of way where I started, you know.
Let me ask you, you said you were kind of a late bloomer, and then you got locked up. Like how old were you when you got locked up?
In my teenage years, it was like 18, 20, 21, and 23.
22. So it was like four little skid bids or
nah, like really one, two little skid bids, you know, but like, and then, yeah. And so that was sort of that whole time era was that was it, you know, trying to like integrate into normal society and just being, just realizing that like, there's a lot of stuff that you have going on that you're not even really capable of being in relationship with another person. You can't take care of yourself. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
A lot of people carry that into their adult life. And I'm definitely somebody that's like replaced a lot of work in the street stuff with like work in my music and career.
Right, right.
Just because it's like second nature to just like bury emotions and things of that and just navigate it to work, you know, because you just always trying to stay afloat, figure out.
Right.
Not a bad thing or a good thing. It's just a thing to accept. So when you make time for another person in your life and fit them into, you know, there's just learning how to deal with somebody else besides yourself is it's crazy. Right. Well, especially if you love that person. So that's.
Yeah.
That's the stuff.
Well, I mean, I think you're just being, I think you're being, you know, by doing that, you're being kind. But did you grow up in a traditionally Jewish home, or what was the.
Like my parents are Israeli. So immigrant parents, I think so much focus on like my father's father's whole family was killed in the Holocaust. My mother's father's whole family was killed. Like, so they just, the way they were taught was like, you know, don't talk about stuff, shut up, work, just eat it and do what you got to do.
Right.
And now, you know, obviously like that stuff didn't work. So I was ended up in the drug stuff.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, it can work in the drug state. I mean, if you keep your head down and work, I mean, that's the greatest drug dealers of all times are the ones that kept their head down and work, you know?
I mean, actually, yeah, if you're still a drug dealer, then that actually does work. But I am not.
So any drug dealers that are in the audience, just so you know, keep your head down and keep working.
Yeah. Keep doing your thing and don't tell anybody anything.
And if you do what you love, you never have to work a day in your life. So, keep that in mind.
Yeah, man.
So it's a funny thing because I have this, you know, through doing consultations and doing the show, I've come up with this kind of theory about immigrant parents. And I mean, this is kind of across the board, immigrant parents, kids have the least amount of like emotional acuity and understanding relationships than anybody because of that. Because, you know, your parents come from this kind of situation where it's all about survival. And so you're always surviving. You're not really learning to access what we, you know, whatever your happiness is or whatever that. You know, whatever self-fulfillment is, you know what I mean? Because it's, you're taught to, shut up, go to work, go to school, grind.
Emotions are weak.
Yeah.
Emotions are weak. Yeah. And then you become emotional and then it just bursts out. So you're extremely emotional. So you don't know how to control your, you know what I mean? You don't actually know how to work with your emotions, right?
Right.
And it's like day one on the job. You're like, oh, like my God, you know, this is intense. So for me, I'm getting out of a relationship, but like, I don't think you are getting out of a relationship. The relationship's over, but for you, it's like hard to start a process. Like what, you know, happened. So, you know, at least for men, and I'll say for myself, you know, I would stick with things for too long and not know how to address things because what I learned is that my parents definitely have issues, but they stayed together no matter what. So they probably go years without talking about shit. Point in case, I was in Germany. This is a crazy story. I did a tour in Germany. I called up my uncle, right? My uncle had married someone. My uncle, you know, born in Israel, moved to Germany, married someone. I called my uncle. Like, no one picked up the phone for whatever reason. So my father said, I'll show them. I won't talk to them for a whole year. Like, you know what I mean? Like
what
that.
The fuck?
Yeah, that was so crazy. But to my parents, it's like, fuck that. Like,
that makes sense.
And to us, you're just like, I don't think that's so healthy. You maybe could have just been like, hey, is there a reason? But that's sort of how my family is processed. I look at other people's family; they're so emotionally talking, supportive. And I'm just like, wow, you know, that's beautiful. So I have, so I'm trying to learn a lot on how to not stuff a lot of feelings out and like learn how to say things you really want to. And that affects my work, affects all my relationships across the board. And of course, affects the romantic ones. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, of course, because those are more, those relationships are a lot more delicate too. I mean, it's a lot more delicate. There's a level of fear that exists because you're into somebody, you know, you don't want to lose them. It's, you know, these insecurities.
Exactly. They, people go from being your partner to being like an authority figure because they're like, oh, don't make me pull the plug on this. And you're like, I don't want to, you know, piss you off. And you're like, you know, because you got to address things. I would say watching my family's relationships of romantic ones, I don't, it's not like I'm like, oh my God, my parents are so in love. My brother is so in love. My other brother is so in love.
Yeah, yeah.
I look at them and they'll be like, yep, they're married.
Yeah, it's also, I'm a relationship, and you know, basically sex, children, everything becomes sort of like a job. It's like
obligatory. It's just what you're supposed to do.
Yeah, this is just culturally. This is what you do. You get married. You do this. You do that. You do whatever, and then you move on. So, I mean, am I wrong in assuming that Israeli Jews are different than, say, for instance, New York Jews? Like, just
100%.
Okay, could you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. So there's like a little hierarchy, and I think all sort of.
Sure. Absolutely.
And all sort of. I'm sure like it's in the Black community, Spanish community, and Puerto Rico. Don't call me Dominican. I'm Puerto Rican, you know, or Mexican, El Salvadorian, et cetera.
Yeah. Ecuadorian. Yeah.
Highbrow. Oh, I'm Colombian. I'm from not Bogota. I'm from Medellin. Like it's a different place. Right.
Yeah. Even within the country, there's that, you know?
Yeah. So in Israeli Jews are definitely like, we're from Israel, it's fine. You understand, they grew up around all Jews, right? And Arabs. And then you have American Jews, which are like, come from a lot of Ashkenazi Jews. Now in Israel, there's so far, I mean, Ashkenazi Jews aren't as high as the population. I mean, it's a third. At certain times, it was different. There are Jews from other parts of in New York, there's Persian Jews, and the Persian Jews are like, oh, we're not Ashkenazi. You get a Syrian Jew, it's even another. So definitely different, and there's definitely a different home structure, right? There's definitely a different home structure. And if you're just like, saying coming from an older country, divorce, it's like, you know, it's not like an option almost. It's like you just like stay with each other. In America, the Jews, therapy, bagels, lox, it's just a kind of different kind of culture.
It's a softer kind of.
Yeah, it's a great way to put it. But I mean, obviously, there's unique cases in every situation.
Yeah, I mean, there's always exceptions to the rule. But I mean, I think you can't look at the true culture if you don't. I mean, the whole point of making generalizations is so that you escalate the dialogue, so that you have an understanding of the patterns.
There's Jewish day camp and summer. Like I never did that. Yeah. We did sports. We went to synagogue. Like we spoke Hebrew at the home. And that's definitely it. And like Israeli Jews are very much like, well, we speak Hebrew and this is enough. And we're from the nation. And but they love America. But, you know, this place is the worst. And American Jews just deal with different stuff in America. Yeah. Yeah.
I have a lot of just American Jewish friends and they're, you know, the Israeli Jews have the overbearing mom? Is that a thing as well?
I think you have a Jewish mother is a Jewish mother wherever they are in the world, you know. I mean, if a mother wants to worry, my mother's like, your son, your brother, he never calls me. Da, 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 da. I'm worried. And I'm like, you know, I gotta stick it to my brother. But you know, mothers worry and stuff. I guess parents.
And it's also,
like,
I mean, if you think about it historically, it's, you know, like we find that the history, like I don't think that we deal with the fact that there's a, you know, like, you know, for the most part, this is a relationship show, right? And what and there's a lot of people who are making these, you know, on the internet, they're making, I mean, all these guys, like these guys who are like killing it, Fresh and Fit and Alpha Male and Kevin Samuels, and all these dudes are very defined about what the roles are, to Andrew Tate and stuff. And one of the things that I think is that I think that none of them take into consideration. And the reason why I even take into consideration is because I'm much older. You know, I just have more experience and I have a longer, a wider cross section of people that I've helped and I've dealt with in this. And what you find is nobody's really considering the trauma that people go through, and the fact that there was only, it's very recent that we're talking about where people understand therapy. So like, if you have families that were killed in the Holocaust, and you know, you literally as a mother, your children could end up dead or disappeared or something. I mean, the worry is not unreasonable in terms of the way what your socialization is. And then there's never a reboot of that. You know what I'm saying? That's always a present thing. Not only that, but there's studies that even talk about that trauma is built into the DNA, that the genetic trauma that we pass on from generation to generation, and then we bring it into these relationships. You know, just not just, you know, male-female relationships, but even family relationships.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure, with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Yo, if you love what we're doing, please, the best way to support us is on patreon.com/manschool202. That would really help us.
Yeah, that's where we do all the bonus content every week. You get a lot of perks for joining us and supporting us. We do a bonus show every week. This week's show, we talk a lot about how to build up your confidence and the importance of not lying. Plus, if you love the show and want to access the archives from starting at episode one, where we beige Philip, that's over at patreon.com/manschool202. That's a way to support us. Another way to support us, if you love us, we do relationship consultations. If you want a relationship consultation from me, you go email me at advicefromharry@gmail.com. And if you want a relationship consultation from Dante, you can go to dantenero.com and click on consult.
Right. I would say I come from a family that, like, I told my parents, I was like, if you guys died tomorrow, like, I wouldn't know anything about you. You guys only open up. You know what I mean? I know.
Do you ask questions in that?
You have to prowl. Like, even when my aunt is really good. My father's like, oh, don't remember. My mother's like, what do you want me to tell you? My father told me absolutely nothing. Mm-hmm. Like, you know what I mean?
Right.
My grandfather passed away. They found, like, you know, 30 racks, like, in buried in the floors and like coffee cans. Like, you know what I'm saying? It's like a mind state of people that this is how they're operating. They're not thinking of like, oh, let me do, you know, by rose. It's a little.
You know what I want to? You know, I want to paint. I'm going to get some easels and paint.
So listen, my mom now is coming into this where she's like painting and she's knitting and she's doing, and she's really like nurturing her child that was in her that like didn't get to grow up. Because you think my mother got married as a child. Like I went to jail. My mother got married at 21. Like I went to jail and turned 21 in jail. So like that it's just two different things. I'm looking at the pictures. She's 40, you know, 42. Three kids, you know, zero kids, and I'm like rapping on a subway train and like, you know, just a different time.
And so driving now, her out of her mind because she's worried every second of every
right. But now that I'm older, I love building relationship with her and asking her about certain things and because she, like now that I go to therapy and I'm learning about like how to, you know, get people to open up to me, and they don't want to, like, they don't need to go to therapy. Like they're going to be fine without ever going, but they can I always think of like ways that I could build my relationships with my brothers, with my nephews and nieces, and with my parents. And it's an ongoing thing. Like, why I like to go home is because I'll learn more about my family the more I spend time with them. You know, if you're just like, hi, bye, that's sort of the family we come from. So it's like, we don't have any problems or any fights or the family reunions, but it's almost better. I think it's sometimes better that some of these people do have fights. Like, it's, I think the term is conflict.
Well, I mean, if you're not fighting, I mean, the only way you can, the only way you're going to find conflict is if you're engaging with each other. If you don't engage with also, each other, then you never fight.
That's the only time you get any information, like any real, oh yeah, that's why you fucking left your first wife, you piece of shit. Like, and you're like, oh geez, I had no idea. That's why you have a second family, motherfucker. You're like, all right, hold on, let me write this.
Is that why
down.
You call him Uncle Dad? Yeah. You're like, that's weird.
That's the only way to figure anything out.
Well, yo, you know, dude, I think the other thing too is we, when it comes to relationships, we're coming to having like healthy, you know, romantic relationships. The way we, I mean, it's gonna sound a little creepy, but it's the way that we deal in our families that give us the practice to deal with these relationships. I mean, when we look at our, you know, you look at your mom, that's the representation of what womanhood is. When you're a little kid, she's a woman and your dad is a man. And then you go, okay, my understanding of this is what my understanding of it is, because it's what you're confronted with.
Right. My mom was a nurse. Mm-hmm. She's like the one takes care of everyone if they get sick. Mm-hmm. My mom, cook of the house, so she cooks. So like, I'm like, as an adult, I'm like, what do I know how to do? Like, I don't know how to. Like, I need how to learn how to do certain shit. You know, like, tell my father, teach me how to change a tire. Like certain thing of being a man. You could put me in a. I've learned how to like throw me in Kansas and give me a microphone and a venue. I could come out with hundreds of dollars and a place to sleep at someone's house. I could teach my children that, you know,
right.
Not necessarily like my father, when I grew up, he was like, well, this is how you run a business. Cause he ran his own business. And he was like, even though you're just starting, and I'm super grateful for that. But when it came to relationships and romance and things like that, a lot of that was built on my own fantasies and just drifting out of sort of like what I do to make a woman happy. You know, in my last relationship, I was really, I think if there's anything I could, you know, you learn what could you do different? It's like the ability to be like wrong and know that you don't really know shit. You know what I'm saying? And you're open to learning and getting better with each other. And I don't think like, you know, at certain times, everyone's like, all right, might need to have to put a pause on this. You know what I mean? And take some time to learn more about me. And I'm like, well, I have a lot of unresolved trauma. I started going to therapy every week, paying a shitload of money to do all different kinds of trauma therapy that I didn't realize that I have. And I've been, you know, so.
Yeah, I think what happens too is so you said you were something that I heard you say initially, you said that you were a late bloomer. Did you, when you said that you were like, you lost your virginity, how old were you when you lost your virginity? And
after high school.
After high school. So what were you like, 18 or so?
Yeah, that was like the summer I turned 18. Yeah.
Now
I think like that's when I really started getting high, you know?
Yeah.
So like any of my interactions were like with women at that time in college were like just hookups, and maybe, you know, I'll hook up with somebody and stuff like that. And then anybody that I would like, you know, date for a few months or whatever, it was just like, I was like so obsessed, almost like, oh my God, I love this person. Like, you know,
right.
Like, it was like, this is the person I'm going to be with forever. Oh my God. You know? And that was the case, you know?
That had a lot to do with, I guess, it's just, I mean, I think everybody does that. I just think when you're a late bloomer, it happens. It just looks goofier because you're older. You know, like I remember my girlfriend in first grade. You know what I mean? Like, it was no sexual thing, but I was like, ooh, this little Panamanian girl, Her name was, I still remember her name was Damaris, and she had little shiny patent leather shoes, and she had two long ponytails, and she was missing a tooth in the front. And I remember saying, that's my girlfriend. You know what I mean? Like, from first grade. I remember going to second grade. I can tell you second grade, it was a Puerto Rican girl. Her name was Suzette Charles. Yes, Suzette Charles. She was a little Puerto Rican girl, another girl with a really long ponytail, right? And then in third grade, it was...
You started early with abandoning black women.
Because my two... First of all, Damaris was dark-skinned Panamanian. She was chocolate Panamanian.
I don't think Yamanika would say that counts.
I don't think that Yamanika would say it counts if I dated the queen of the blackest queen of Sheba. Somehow I don't protect
you. Somehow you're
women.
Still a traitor.
I'm a race traitor. So third grade was Monica Perryman and Donnery Pert. They kind of shared me, you know, like throughout the year. And then it was Michelle Watson in fourth grade. My point is, like, I have these names and these pictures in my head from very, very, very early on. So, like, I was getting this practice, you know, this kind of relationship. But no matter how juvenile and how childish it was, you know what I'm saying? I was practicing. I like you. You like me. You know, let's hold hands. You want some of my candy? You know what I mean? Whereas it's funny because you talk about Yamanika. So Yamanika was super religious and super Christian, right? So Yamanika, she was on the show and she said that she didn't lose her virginity until she was 26. Right. So then she has this religion is telling her that her cookie is the greatest thing in the world and you don't give it away. And now you're 26 and you're dealing with men who have already had multiple partners. Right. And they don't care about this cookie that you've been saving for Matt. And we don't care. Like, we just trying to get it and hit it and quit it because, you know, we're immature and that's our mentality. You know what I mean? So,
right.
A lot of times the guys who I consult with and the guys who call me and ask questions and stuff, a lot of them are late bloomers, but they're also late bloomers and they're older. And now they're forced to deal with women who have had extensive socialization and an understanding of the social dynamics, what their power is, what their power isn't. So if you're a guy and you're 18, 19 years old, and you start getting laid at 18, 19 years old, this chick might have had multiple partners already. And if she didn't have multiple partners, even if she didn't have multiple sexual partners, she's had multiple emotional partners because from the inception of her, you know, being a woman, guys are hitting on her. Guys are, you know what I'm saying? This is an ongoing thing. And one of the things that I say all the time is two things that men are expected to do with no practice is relationships and sex. Somehow by osmosis, you're just supposed to know what to do, you know? The first thing I tell guys when I'm talking to them is I go, first of all, you got to forgive yourself for not knowing something that you were never taught. And when you say that out loud, it seems so absurd. Because why would
the thing? I never talked to my brother about my one brother. My oldest brother is Orthodox Jewish with five kids. My other brother married a non-Jewish girl from like high school. I come from a town where everyone married somebody from high school. So like by 27, they were popping out kids and stuff.
Right.
But like 27, I had like 3 years or four years sober and I'm like touring the fucking country and I'm like, I'm going to be a rapper and I'm selling my CDs and t-shirts and this is what we're doing. And then 29, I moved to LA, you know, and get my own place and that's it. And the rest is like, you know, then my career, I've been full time with what I do since then. And like, if you don't have your brothers, right. And who am I learning from? All the people, my brother was in a full on marriage and then left and then like, I didn't really talk to him about the ins and outs of how he felt and this, and, you know, dating and what do you, you know, what's the, you know, tips on girls. And all my friends, all the people that you talk to, then you realize, like, bro, all you guys have failed relationships. Like, none of you guys are like, who are you talking to? Like a homie that would be like happily married with a kid and be like, oh, this is the guy that you would probably want to model your stuff off of. And so a lot of us have, like, you're getting advice from like a fire hydrant that's, you know, been peed on, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. And then it's like opening, the water comes out wrong and it's dirty. And you're like, oh man, I mean, it does work.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Go for the advice. You feel me?
Well, it's also a question of whether or not they know anyway.
I'm giving myself.
You know, right. I mean, yeah,
exactly. You know. Forgiving yourself is a crazy concept, especially because you're like, you forgive yourself. You should have had it figured out 5 years ago. You got to forgive yourself now. And then you got to give yourself another 2, 3, 4 years to really, you know?
Well, it's funny that conceptually we look at that in terms of relationships, but you've been rapping for how long now?
Me?
Yeah.
I've been rapping since I was 17.
Okay. So
25 years.
And 25 years. How old are you now?
42.
Okay, so what I'm saying is, you wouldn't expect somebody who started rapping 2 years ago to be good at it. I mean, you know what I mean? It's just, it's an absurd standard to put people under. So, I'll do talk to a dude, and he'll be talking to me, and he'll say, hey, yeah, you know, I didn't have a lot of girls. I don't have a body. And their perception is, right away, that because I have, that I expect them to. And that is the empathy that, you know, you have to have the empathy to get people to open up anyway, that you have to make people like you give a fuck. And not only do you give a fuck, but that you care about their personal growth.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app today to get free delivery on your first 3 orders, while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
And what I find on the internet in general, all the relationship gurus, all of the pickup dudes, all of these guys.
Watch all of them. That watch. It's there. It's so much of it. You like one thing and your whole thing is like.
Is your whole algorithm is that. But it's, they have no idea what they're talking about because there's no empathy. And so there's no real sense of, like, you can't learn from somebody until you have some level of empathy that you're willing to walk in their shoes. And it's interesting because you've always embraced, you know, you're unapologetically Jewish, but you've always, as long as I've known, you've always embraced like hip hop culture and music and art and stuff like that. And so it gives you a you know, even that is something that makes you, gives you a sensitivity to emotions and stuff like that, because you can't do art without, art doesn't happen without passion. You know, I mean, Harry was talking to me about this, won't name no names, but people that are comics that are emotionally unattached to their material. Quite sure you know who I'm talking about, Harry.
Yeah, I know who you're talking about, but, and it's never as good.
Harry, out him. That makes your show better.
I still got to work with these motherfuckers. Got to work with these motherfuckers. Well, we've had a couple
70% of the audience too. You know, that a lot of times, but good.
Yeah, but you, when you're not connected to it, it means less. It just it feels like it just doesn't feel like it's together, and you have to be connected with whatever you do. And so but the tough part is finding out who you are, because a lot of these. Some of these artists, they're managing to do the art, but they have a talent to do it, but they forget to connect themselves with it. But you have to figure out who you are, and that's a tough challenge for any human being, let alone a performer or an entertainer.
So
let me ask you a question.
Of course.
Just in regards to, like, when you start liking, like, do you know a lot about attachment style, like anxious attachment, dismissive avoidance, you know, fearful avoidant.
Explain. I probably have come up with it or talked about it in some way, but explain. I mean, you're using these technical terms, but let me explain it to me, and then I'll tell you what my thought is.
Well, yeah, I mean, I guess there's, you know, the idea, okay, opposites attract, like it's a thing, right? It's just like, I'm a rapper, I'm out. I don't necessarily want to be like dating another rapper or a DJ. Right. That's like also right. Like, I'm, you know, everyone's like, oh, that would make sense. You guys get to do it together. I'm like, no, you know, I would kind of want something to balance, you know, like I'm on the scale. Yeah. Anxious attachment, in just a sense, is like, let's say things that make you anxious. Like for me, if someone pulls away or if I call up Dante and that he doesn't pick up, and then I'm feeling bad, you know, it gets me anxious. I might call Dante again and be like, damn, Goshen called me 3 times. Calm down, you know?
Yeah,
you're like, this guy's calling a little bit too much, you know? And whenever someone encroaches in your space, you're sort of like, all right, dismissive and get away. And you're like, yeah, good to hear from you. You know, I hope your day went okay. You're like, who says, I hope your day still goes great. But you were, you said, okay. And then an anxious attachment would always internalize that. And the more someone pulls away, they go in. Dismissive avoidant. It's like they dismiss things and kind of push away as like a safe space. For me, my safe space is being overbearing. So I'm going to end up alone. Dismissive is let me push them away. So I'm alone. Fearful is sort of another. I'm learning how to cope with that. Like, and just become more secure. Secure is being able to, I guess you would say, read the room.
Right. Well, you're saying socially you read the room to know where you're at and whatever.
Yeah. I think that falls under, I think Dante and I were just talking about this recently, under self-esteem and feeling that you're worth those things. So the self-esteem and knowing like you are concerned about yourself, so you assume that somebody else doesn't want to pick up the phone because they don't want to talk to you because you feel like that's who you are to them, or that you're not worthy of it. As opposed to like, they should pick up my call. If I was important, they'd pick up my call immediately. You know, so you start to, it's a feeling about self-esteem and whether or not you're worthy of that, either the love or the adulation.
I couldn't have explained it better, Harry. My eyes just welled up.
We have these little conversations between us, you know, we talk about them between us, and that's how we solve it, you know, because I've gone through the big issue I've had with self-esteem, or that was related to self-esteem for a long time. I had an issue and still kind of have an issue. I feel I cannot get past when somebody else is uncomfortable in a room, meaning like it affects me if somebody else is unhappy, even if I don't know the people, if they're strangers, but especially in the confines of a relationship or something. So, you know, if my girl is unhappy, now I'm unhappy because I want her to be happy. So it's either, did I do something wrong to make her unhappy, or could I be doing something to make her happy? And, you know, those are valuable things to have empathy, but I have almost too much to the point where I can't get
it's
past.
It's codependent. It becomes codependent.
Yeah.
You know,
I read this term, and this is something that like represents my family. I don't know. I heard the word is called confluence. I think might be the word, which is basically this. It might be using the wrong word, so don't quote me on that. But the perspective that no fighting is good, fighting is bad. So as long as there's no arguments, then it's good. We don't argue. We don't disagree. We're just yes men. We're just yes men. You know what I'm saying? And everybody knows a yes man technically isn't good because there's no critique. There's no like, how do we get better? Right. And going with that into relationship is basically like, I learned that from home. Right. Oh, everything looks fine. Everything's fine.
Yeah.
Everything's fine. Everything is fine. Fine is an acronym for fucked up, insecure, neurotic, and emotional. Like I'm very insecure. Like I'm insecure. I'm like working on being secure, and it's mad embarrassing to say I'm insecure. I'm secure. I could go in front of 10,000 people and do some improv, but put me in a room with one person and just trying to become intimate, I'm like, let me run for the hills.
Right, because if you're in front of 10,000 people, they only see what you present.
Instagram. It's the highlight reel. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's me performing. Yeah. I'm putting on a show. But to be like Rami and be like, okay, relationship is somebody you want. You can't be Kosha Dills all the time. You can't be Right. You know, Dante Nero on stage all the time doing a set, you know, other times, you know, you're just doing regular shit. And for me in a relationship, I have to, that's like my main goal is to, you know, take the performer skin off when mm-hmm. it come down. But that was also, I learned how to do that because that was like, you know, something that sort of how I dealt with being just a person in my house. You know what I mean? How do I get that self-esteem? Yeah. If you have low, most performers I feel have low self-esteem, but when we perform in front of people, we operate off the highs that we get from the adrenaline, from making people laugh and singing your words or whatever your performance technique is. Now, mm-hmm. now Harry come up with his podcast and get a bunch of fucking 5-star reviews on iTunes, you know?
Yeah.
Feel good about yourself. You know what I mean?
Well, the thing with that is the reason you feel comfortable with that is because you've practiced that little by little and you mastered it. Because the first time you got up on stage, I'm sure it didn't go great or it didn't go as well as it could have. For most comedians, it doesn't go great when you first start out. For, you know, I assume the same thing is for hip hop, you know, like any art. And you practice it, and it's going back to what Dante was saying that, you know, it's one of those things that we're expected to do without any practice. So the reason you go in front of an arena full of people and you're not scared is because you worked your way up to it. You built it. You practiced little by little. And that's why you have that confidence. But we don't tend to practice a lot of that stuff because we don't even know what we're supposed to be working on psychologically until years later. You know, there's stuff I'm figuring out now that I haven't worked on, you know, at this point in my life.
There's an interesting thing. It's interesting you bring this up, and Harry brought this. I'm glad Harry brought this up because Harry and I don't know if we talked about this show. We probably mentioned it, but Harry called me up and he was like, "Man, I have this. I'm have this thing where like if my girl is upset, then I'm like, I'm upset." And a lot of the things that you're talking about, I guess, are very common among performers, but not just. I don't think it's any different than performers. I think what happens is it's just hyper. It's hyper exposed because we're performers. So, but there's a few things that I could speak to the self-esteem. I could speak to, you know, even what, like one of the things is when you are charged off of the accolades that strangers give you, right? The first problem with that is that when you do that, I'm not saying you're not supposed to enjoy, what you do and the fact that people enjoy what you do. But when you can't pick that up. Like you can't let them decide what your value is. If your Instagram followers, I so many dudes I know, famous dudes, guys who are millions, making millions, and they're online and they're killing it and da da da. And they're so insecure. This is something that I've said 100 times. I've said this 100 times. I mean, Dave Chappelle, absolutely the GOAT, or at least one of the GOATs. But I've never seen him go out and not drink a liter of tequila every time he goes out. Like, if you tell me, and I'm a 57-year-old man, there's no way. I mean, and you know, you clean and sober now. Somebody's doing that, you're medicating. You're medicating. Yeah. Why are you medicating? You're medicating because your open state is not good enough. You're coping. And
you don't even need to medicate on drugs and alcohol. Like no. To medicate off your work or your or like
you can medicate on your likes on your. Yeah, I mean, we medicate off the accolades of. So it's funny. So that's the first thing. Harry brought this to me and I was like, Harry, I mean, that's insecure. And I don't think he could see it in a minute because it's like, you're going, look, I care about my girl and I care about whether she's happy. I mean, how does that relate to self-esteem? But what am I doing? It's sort of like what you're saying, what you said initially is like, is this person going to pull the plug on me? Like, but what you don't understand is when you really understand what your value is, when somebody pulls the plug on you and you've really done the work to be the best version of yourself, what ultimately happens, them pulling the plug on you is their loss. So it's funny. Yeah. I was at Eastville Comedy this weekend and I was hanging out with Dutch. Dutch is the bouncer there, right? And I had some really great shows. So Janine Garofalo was there, and I love watching Janine because I love Janine is absolutely. She's the history of alt comedy. Like, she invented alt comedy. And so her comedy is, in a way, very kind of, this is what happened today. This is what I want to talk about. It's not really scripted and stuff. It's kind of almost improv-y. And we all know that improv-y is always, is because it's not, it, I mean, sometimes it's great. Most of the times it's not. Because when you hone it, you know what I mean? When you hone it down to what it is, it's always better when it's prepared. Something is always better.
Well, it's high risk, high reward. You know, you're trying something, and when it works, it's amazing. But when you don't hit that landing, it's a catastrophe.
Yeah. So, you know, you gotta, I mean, what is that you say, Harry, all the time? I always remember you saying this. If a baseball player, if he hits over 300, he's amazing.
Yeah.
That's 300 out of 1,000, though.
Yeah.
Right. That's 1,000 times. Like, that's not even, that's barely a third, right?
That's not even a third. No,
that's not a third.
That's less than, three out of 10 times that you only 3 out of 10 times, which means 7 out of 10 times you have failed. But in baseball, those are amazing numbers. But
those
in comedy,
are amazing numbers. But and then the guys who hit the home runs are the guys who, they, yeah, when they strike out bad. It's ugly, you know. So dust is flying.
Big ass swing.
Yeah. Because you need the big ass swing.
I just did that in a relationship thing, and with an ex, and with
did what?
What, like, a big ass swing?
I took a big swing. I don't. Yeah, I did a nice swing. Yeah, and then other times you're like, okay, maybe I need to go back to the batting cages and just work on my shit for a little bit. And then I could come back and get drafted again, and maybe I'll see on the field.
Well, here's where I disagree with that, because you should be in the batting cages, but being in the batting cages is never the same thing as being in a game. You know what I mean? Like, you can be in the batting cages all you want. Yeah, there's this technique and stuff, but we see this all the time when somebody gets on stage, and then here's a principle that I talk about all the time in the show is that. You never can let fear have a seat at the table, because the minute you let any kind of emotion into the decision making, you are cutting your mental capacity down to a third.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
So if you're afraid, if you're arrogant, in order to make clear, you see this with boxers all the time, is a boxer trains to get punched in the face and not have his emotions moved by it. He learns to operate in the same way beyond emotion. And that's because if you're angry, if you're this, whatever, that's where you make the mistakes. So, you can't let emotion have a seat at the table. And that is, I used to think it was just anger, but it's not just anger. It's everything, any kind of emotion. When you're making a decision, even in a relationship, you got to step back and say, well, is what I'm feeling really what's going on? Is that the dynamic? I can't tell you how many times I've counseled dudes and, we're breaking up and I love her. And I go, well, why do you love her? Well, I mean, you know, she, and they can't tell you. Because the relationship has gone to trash for so long. And then when they do talk about what they love about the girl or what the girl loves about the guy, what they're talking about is what was initially the thing that caught them in the first place. But they haven't experienced those things, that tenderness, that concern, all of that, and throughout the relationship.
Right. Well, if they were, then they wouldn't be at that point.
Sure.
There's a thing called limerence. Do you know, the word limerence sort of describes what is like part of the fantasy relationship. So it's like the fantasy is that if you don't do the work, like, you know, you're like, oh, she's so loving. She's so caring. He's so loving. He's so caring. He's always showing up properly. He's doing everything he can. But like, in one mind, you're like this. And another person could be at a different point in your life. So you sort of try to manipulate the relationship into fitting into this mold, right? Like, he's great. He's a baseball player. He bats 335. And then the reality is he's, you know, he's on the double A team, and he breaks out most of the time. And he also doesn't want to get better. You know
right.
what I'm saying?
He's like, right.
And you're like, no. But when I swear, you know what I mean? You're like, and that's so it's like a fantasy thing. And that's sort of my stuff is like throughout the history since I was 18.
Yeah.
I would see somebody and I'd be like, oh, this girl, you know, and, you know, I'm like, no, that was in my head. Maybe not.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
As I got older, it just becomes like a crutch of like, you're like, I could catch myself now doing it with people. And you're like, oh, this is like, if someone's unavailable, you take that and then you manipulate it into something. And this could actually happen in the relationship, right? Because then the relationship starts going down for whatever reason and go back. And I think the only way to really cure all of that is to gotta give things a break and give things space and then really like take a look at yourself and why you're doing. That's why I say I'm going back to the batting cages and a lot of self-development, because I'm like, I'm going to be alone for the rest of my life if I didn't work on certain things anyway, right?
Yeah, yeah. Like, well, I mean, you got to work on those things, but I don't think you mm-hmm. I'm just saying, don't put life on pause. Like, right, live life. You know what I mean? And
exactly.
Even emotion, relationships, dating and stuff, it's like, don't put it on pause, because while you're putting on pause, I mean, this is really how you got there in the first place. It's like, a retarded, and I don't mean in that way, but a retarded sense of dealing with social in the first place. You get a late start, then you're in this situation, then you're incarcerated, and then you know what I'm saying? So now you're 28, 30, and you haven't had really any real experience in the social dynamics.
My first real, I had like a girlfriend, I was 22, 21,
right.
22.
Right.
I had one when I was 29.
Right.
Then I went my entire 30s. I got a girlfriend at 39 that ended now at like 42. And mm-hmm. then, you know, I was 39 turning 40. And like, and you're like, damn, like, what did I do in between? And you're like, there's, you know, I'm like right now where I'm at, I'm like, no, the online dating, that shit's not for me. You know, I'm sure it could be, but I wouldn't do it healthily. I'm just like, no, I live in New York. I'm out here.
But why do you perceive that as something different than anything else?
It's just something I wouldn't. I meet so many people in general.
Oh yeah. So like, are you saying that you don't?
I'm
need
very
it?
Much a romantic. It's like I don't need it. Like last person I met, like you know, last person I was with, I met in a journey of like running.
Yeah.
Running
yeah,
throughout
yeah.
the thing. I think that's an awesome. You know, I met the person in an elevator. So
well, I mean, but you gotta meet people. I mean, you gotta meet people. So I don't see any difference with the dating apps than anything else. In fact, to a certain extent, the dating apps allow
could be even better because you allow you to just be like, boom.
Yeah, you're like, what is this?
Bullshit.
But yeah, you can also find more. In theory, you're supposed to, depending on the app, you actually should have something in common a lot more than just a stranger that you would meet at a bar or a restaurant.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
So it actually cultivates more people and supposedly something that you have in common.
Well, I also think what's interesting about that is the fact that you're not emotionally attached to the way in which you meet. Like it's on an app. It's like I got a date, I'm on the app. Okay. Do I like this person? Don't I like I don't really like them. So you don't even have to go, wow, I really met them, and then it was just so cool. And she said this and I said that. Again, that's going into back to what I'm saying is about never letting emotion have a seat at the table. I mean, you need a clear, concise idea of where your current location is and what your destination is, you know. I think all of those things are really, really, really important. And, you know, when you do that, I think you're just better off. I sort of feel like, so it's interesting. I remember this.
I respect that. I respect that.
You know, and I get the romantic thing, but the thing is, great relationships is work. Like it's.
Right.
It's,
yeah. The romance is in the beginning of that.
Yeah. That's great.
It's true. It is true. It's like, well, it's taken back from like, how did my parents meet? Oh, they met at, you know, at a party in real life, you know, mm-hmm. like, I mean, met I met you in an elevator. I met you at the supermarket. And you're like, where do we meet? And you're like, I swiped on 117 girls.
I just said yes.
And I was like, meet me for coffee. And I tried to sleep with you immediately. You know what I mean? Whatever.
Right.
Like, it's an app, right? But on the app, like, there, you're right. There's no, it's just like, it's just a number.
I'm trying to meet people. Let me see.
Okay. Right. You're trying to meet. So everyone's swiping right and swiping left. But in real life, we do this too. But it's just emotionally taxing, because if you're like, I don't want, like, you look at it and you're like, you're literally constructing the person that you want. You're like, this is the age. This is the, I need them to do this. This is how you need to do that. And you do give yourself a better chance than randomly meeting someone. Then you have to get to know them. And then they tell you, oh, by the way.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, that doesn't work for me. You know?
Well, you know what's crazy? The I was just in when we were just thinking about this, it hit me. I don't think I've ever been on a app date. Like, I've never ever talked to a chick off of, never really got them off of an app or something like that. I mean, I think for at one point in time, I also kind of always had a roller fuck always kind of. I always had a steady.
Yeah, a lot of apps.
You had a roller dick.
A roller dick.
A roller dick.
I'm gonna pull out my roller dick. Hold on.
I always kind of, and it was always somebody on deck. I had always had somebody on deck in case, and you know what I'm saying? It was just, but I mean, I think that has a lot to do with the fact that I, when it came to women and socially engaging with something, it was something that I did very early on, and I always, and I just got good at it. But it's something that, you know, it's just like freestyling.
Well, you make the world your app. I mean, that's what you do. You just literally swipe right and grab a girl.
You get in order to freestyle, you got to do it. You got to get out there.
That's the thing. When you perform and stuff like that, I don't know. No. Like, we perform because we're like losers. And now all of a sudden, like, people were desirable objects. And like, I felt like shit about myself. I get on stage, destroy another rapper. And now I could literally bag Paris Hilton. And like, he could have been a trash rapper. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
She
could have been a trash human being. You know what I'm saying? Even the fact that and often was. So it's, what I'm saying is, it's so skewed in terms of what we decide as value. And then when these people unfold as to what their true character is and who they are as people and their insecurities.
Jewish, I don't think the apps ever worked for me. I think one time I went to someone's show off of it, and it was like, you know, but also people will know who I am in the Jewish community. So I'm just like, I just like to roll up, and I don't want people to know me as my stage persona. I want people to like me for me. Like, that's the whole thing. And that's a big thing. And coming from like a traumatic background, or not to say it's trauma, but like, when you have, like, you look at your friends, and most of the friends you have are either, you know, dead or in jail, you know what I'm saying? Due to the nature of the stuff you were involved in,
drugs
and alcohol and stuff, or performer friends start dying early because of health complications or drugs, or suicide or something like that. We all have friends and performers like that. You know, you look and you're like, where can I go that's just normal, where people are not like that, right? And it's just completely, so for performers, I think.
But the irony is that's what the apps would be. And also, whatever you present is what you are. So it doesn't matter. You could, I mean, I'm not the same maniac that I am on stage and talking about.
I am.
Yeah, that's a different story. But you choose that. But that's not true, Deontay, because you're up there talking about, sometimes I watch you, you know, sometimes you go blue on the nights and you're talking about fucking and sucking and this and that and off stage. And then you're like, hey, you see that documentary? I just watched this documentary about Oppenheimer, the documentary. That's where all the real stuff is. I got to close out. One second. Hey, bitch, what's right?
But I am. I'm that too.
Picture.
Yeah.
And this is something I did. I painted it in fucking New Zealand. This is you look at it,
right?
And it's like, whatever. It's, you know, it's like, it looks like a child painted it. But that's like how old I am emotionally. So this is what I'm coming up with. But I felt so good to just be like, you know what?
Yeah.
I'm not like I'm not like a normal. If you put me next to a 42-year-old guy on Wall Street, he'll be like, "Whoa, that's so much cool what you do." And I'm like, "Yeah, but you like you learned how to wake up to go to work at 9. Like I'm just waiting. All of a sudden, I've like gotten a commitment at 9 a.m. and I'm like sort of becoming normal. And yeah. a big thing that I deal with is just like the scheduling and normalcy and sort of like commitments.
Coach, you can do that too. Normal? What's normal?
No. But what I mean is being part of society when you're looking for dates. You're probably not. I'm not really interested in being with some late cabaret singer that stays up till 4 a.m.
Yeah, I get it.
Like I want.
But is that based on logistics? Or it's just you don't want some goofy bitch
because
singing.
I want a family and stuff like that. Yeah, sure. I don't want some bitch singing late.
I get it. But I'm gonna tell you something. We talk about normalcy. Keep in mind, serial killers got to go to the grocery stores too. They go and they buy tomatoes and lettuce and
Jeffrey Dahmer probably went to a couple different places to get that fridge.
Yeah, he's exactly. like,
"Hey, do you guys price match? Do you guys?"
He was at PC Richards. Look, if I find it for cheaper someplace, can I get reimbursed for this freezer that I'm?
Can I Jeffrey need the Dahmer. Freezer to be a little bigger than the fridge? I mean, I don't want to walk in freezer, but
listen, you're the salesman. You really want me to buy this. Would you mind climbing in the freezer for me? Could you just see if you fit? Let me. How tall are you?
He has a voice that's similar to. I saw Jim Gaffigan. I did a show with Jim Gaffigan last night.
You know,
I'm really interested.
He's really pale. Yo, let's.
I gotta wrap it up because speaking of pale. I have to go to therapy right now, and I'm gonna.
Okay, go do your thing. Plug your stuff real quick. Plug your stuff real quick, and then we got to do the Patreon. We'll do it, Harry.
No worries. Yeah.
I'm Rami on Hinge. Just kidding. I think Kosha Dills is everywhere. KOSHADILLZ. That's on Instagram, Twitter, Threads, KoshaDillsWorld.com. I got a Time Out New York show. I do a Black Jewish collaborative called Solvay at Time Out New York. Check that out. Just DM me for stuff, and I think if you want to reach out, just hit me on the gram, Twitter, all that.
Cool. Harry, bye, quick.
Bye. You could hit me up all my social media at Harry Turjanian, and please join us over at patreon.com/manschool202. We're doing the bonus content. And if you need any relationship consultations, you can email me at advicefromharry@gmail.com.
And if you want from me, you can go to DanteNero.com, click on consult. You can get me all social medias, Dante Nero or some version of that. Google me, bitch. GYBB, get your balls back. WWDD, what would Dante do? The sexual revolutions being podcasted. Peace. We out.